The Devil's Trill. In Daniel Silver's new thriller, The English Assassin, the piece is played in concert by violinist Anna Rolfe. She's the beautiful daughter of Augustus and Marguerite Rolfe, her father a member of Switzerland's banking elite. The concert takes place in the present in Venice, but the story reaches back to the horrors of the Holocaust. The protagonist of the story is Alan Gabriel, a child of Holocaust survivors, a retired Israeli operative, and a restorer of paintings. He's summoned by Augustus Rolfe to work on an old master, but when Gabriel arrives, he finds the banker murdered. There's also a suicide in this story and stolen paintings. The villain of the piece, Switzerland, and its banking system. Daniel Silva is a journalist by training. At one time, he worked in the Middle East as a correspondent for UPI and as a producer for CNN. The English Assassin is his fourth novel. He's our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Daniel Silva, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I thought I recognized that piece. Well, I've only listened to the unaccompanied version of it. I've never heard it performed like that before.
Well, what's the genesis of the idea for The English Assassin?
Well, let me just say one thing quickly. It's my fifth novel, actually. I got one more than you gave me credit for. But it's,
my apologies.
No, it's okay. Gabriel appeared in the last book of mine, a book called The Kill Artist, and I wanted to preserve him as a character and to continue with him, but I didn't want to have him in the Middle East context again, so I was looking for other adventures for Gabriel. And I heard a couple of wonderful stories about Switzerland and art. The first one was a story about how an art restorer was once sent to a villa in Geneva to clean a painting. He wasn't told what the painting was, who owned the painting. He was just told that he could stay in the villa and clean it, and when he was done, he would be paid with a Jaguar motor car. And I thought, what a wonderful setup for a story, to send someone for a job they don't know what exactly it is. And I also heard another story about a art expert who was sent to a warehouse in Switzerland to authenticate a painting. The warehouse was filled with dozens and dozens of canvases and stacks of gold bars. And so these images were playing out in my mind, and so I started putting together the story of looted art in the past in Switzerland.
How extensive was the looting of art in the war?
Well, it was massive. I mean, even before the war started, Adolf Hitler dreamed of building this so-called Führer Museum in his hometown in Austria, and he was going to fill it with the world's finest collection of art, and he was going to get that art by whatever means necessary, whether it was looting, theft, forced purchase, whatever. And so when the war began, as the Nazis were prone to do, they very systematically raped the continent of Europe. When that program was instituted in France in June 1940, they took in a lot of paintings that clashed with their ideology. Impressionists, moderns, Picassos. Nazis didn't like this stuff. It was degenerate art in their eyes. They liked old masters, religious themes, Northern European artists. And so they had to get rid of this stuff. And so they sold it off or traded it for pieces that they wanted. And as a result, a lot of art, thousands of pieces of art, entered the bloodstream of the European art trade. Where did they end up? A lot of them ended up in Switzerland because Switzerland was neutral. Its dealers had a lot of cash because Switzerland was thriving during the war. And Switzerland was effectively a trade center in looted art.
You have a character in the novel say Switzerland is not a real country, it's a business.
And it's run like a business.
A very secretive business at
that.
How did Switzerland come to be such a secretive place, place with no past?
Way back at its birth. I mean, this is a country that was formed 600 years ago as a defensive alliance against outsiders, as a defensive alliance in the protection of property and rights, and personal rights. And that mindset pervades Switzerland to this day. And And so it views outsiders with a fair amount of suspicion and hostility. They routinely refer to foreigners as damned foreigners. They're very nice to you when you're there. They treat you well in hotels and restaurants, and the bankers love to take your money, but they're not terribly fond of foreigners. And so it's a country that is, by its nature, it's a polylingual, polyethnic grouping of people that was formed as a defensive alliance, and a lot of those characteristics remain to this day.
It sounds like you really enjoy doing research for your books.
I love it. I look at books as an opportunity to learn about things that I want to learn about. I mean, here's a book about art looting, the war, Switzerland, art restoration, and music, all of my passions. And so here I'm trying to write page-turning stories of foreign intrigue about artists and musicians. It's fun.
Since creating Gabriel, what have you learned about art restoration?
A lot. I am lucky to call a man who is truly one of the world's finest art restorers. I'm fortunate enough to call him a good friend. His name is David Bull. And he was the head of conservation at the National Gallery here in Washington for a number of years, and he lets me come into the gallery, into the lab, and watch people work, and has taught me a great deal about restoration. Mm-hmm. And what really brought Gabriel to life for me in the last novel is that how similar the craft of restoration and assassination really are. And so there are parallels, and I use them frequently.
Do you paint?
No, I wish I could.
Mm. You know, in a thriller like in any novel, there's character and plot. Mm-hmm. But in the plot of a thriller, there have to be all kinds of twists and turns.
Right.
That's the fun of it.
Right.
How do you develop them, and do you have to keep a careful outline so that you keep things, you know, straight and so that it will all hang together?
I don't feel the need to keep a careful outline to keep it straight. If I'm into it and in mm-hmm. that final stretch when I'm finishing a novel, it all better be straight in my own head or I've got problems. But those twists and turns are, you know, the unexpected is what makes it work, and you look for opportunities, and every scene, I mean, just how do you turn it on its ear? How do you make it good? Mm.
This is the second novel where Gabriel appears.
Right.
I'm wondering if there will be a third.
There is going to be a third. Okay. I'm about 100 pages into it right now, and we'll get back to it when the publication of this one is over.
Mm. Want to tell us anything?
I don't like talking about works in progress, but he's going to tangle with some dark forces connected with the Vatican, I think.
Oh, now there's a good subject.
Yeah.
And, you know, in your research, in The English Assassin, one of the wonderful things about it is we are going back and forth from all these wonderful cities, you know, all across the continent. And I'm wondering, do you get to do that kind of, when you're doing research, can you say, well, I've got to go to the Vatican now?
Of course.
I've got to go to Venice now.
Yes. Yes, and I have 7-year-old twins, and I drag them along with me.
Oh, aren't they lucky?
And aren't they lucky?
Yeah.
And so last spring we spent a lot of time traipsing around Switzerland and the north of Italy, and we're going back in June to do the research for the next one.
Oh. Well, happy trails, and thanks so much for talking with
Thank
us.
Thank you very much.
Daniel Silva has been our guest this afternoon. His latest book, The English Assassin, it is his fifth novel. This is The Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn.